Hi everyone, and I'd just like to start by thanking the organizers. It's a real pleasure to be here. It's my first time actually at the Fields Institute, so I'm very happy to be here, having heard about all the wonderful things that have been going on here over the years. So my talk is about a model for a directed polymer in 1+1 dimensions, and to describe the model. So first I'll just give you a picture. So these are the paths in the model. So these are this is the actual polymer. So it's a semi-continuous model. So by a path we mean an increasing path from say 0, 1 up to T capital N. It's sort of a lattice in the vertical direction and continuous in the horizontal direction, and we can identify each such path by just the sequence of times. You think of these as times at which it jumps up by one. So a sequence of times t1 up to tm minus 1 are these times at which it jumps. And the environment is given by a sequence of independent one-dimensional Bernier motions. So the way that works is, so for each path, which is a sequence of times, we associate a weight, which is the difference, the corresponding, so we associate each independent Bernier motion with one of these levels, and then the weight corresponding to that level is just the increment of that Bernier motion corresponding in between those two times. Or equivalently, if you want to think of it as, so we're just, on each level, we're just putting white noise, independent on every level, and we're just taking such a path and just integrating up the white noise along the path. Okay? That's the model. And, okay, so here there's a corresponding Boltzmann measure. So d phi here, by d phi I mean with respect to the Lebesgue measure on this Euclidean set of paths. So it's just a syntax. And the partition function is given by the integral over such paths. Okay. And so what's random here is that the Brownian motions are random and fixed. So we're interested in the quenched asymptotics of this partition function. Okay. And so this might seem like a slightly strange model, but one of the motivations for studying this model is that it's quite tractable. So in particular, so for example, with Mark Ewer, and then later with John Moriarty, we proved that the limiting free energy exists. So if you consider a box of size capital N, and you consider the normalized logarithmic partition function, then this converges almost surely to a limiting free energy which you can compute explicitly or semi-explicitly. So this function here is the digamma function. And just to mention in passing, so for example, if you check the small beta asymptotics for this free energy, it has this beta to the fourth behavior, which is sort of predicted for these types of models. So for example, a more general result is obtained for corresponding lattice models by Hubert and Lacan. Note here that I've normalized it there by the expectation. So this is the difference between the quenched and annealed free energy. Okay. And more recently, So one of the things that's natural to ask is, what are the fluctuations of this logarithmic partition function? And it's predicted that they should be of the order of n to the 1/3. And indeed, that was shown to be the case in a recent work by Timo Sakelainen and Benedikt Falco. They showed that they obtained estimates of this type, which are, so this is believed to be the correct order of fluctuation. Okay, so what I'd like to talk about in this talk is just what can we say about the law, the distribution of this partition book? And so the first thing to notice is that because it's constructed using Brownian motions, there's an intrinsic scaling property, which, so if we consider the ZNT as a process in T, where T is, we really think of T as time in this model, then by Brownian scaling, this has the same law as sort of rescaled version with the inverse temperature parameter beta set equal to 1. Okay, so that just has the effect of changing time, and you get a constant factor. So if we're interested in the law of this ZNT of beta, then we really only need to consider the case when beta is equal to 1. Okay. And so this is just to, I'm just going to explain why is it the case that for this model it's possible to compute the free energy explicitly. So if we just define, so we consider the logarithmic, the log of ZNT, and think of that as the location of particle number m at time t. Okay, so there's you can think of this as an interacting particle system, and they satisfy these simple stochastic differential equations. So each particle is driven by an independent Brownian motion, and then there's a pairwise interaction, which is just the exponential of the difference between the position of the nth and m minus 1 particles. And this interacting particle system has the product form invariant measure. So that's really the fact, the basic fact, which gives this model, in particular, this can be used by a sort of approach which was, I think, first appeared in a paper by Herman Rost on the totally asymmetric exclusion process, and developed for other models by Timo Seppälinen to compute the free energy density. So there's a kind of relationship between sort of the equilibrium behavior of such particle systems and the non-equilibrium behavior via kind of convex duality. So that's where the formula for the free energy comes from. And so it's talking about the distribution of ZNT. So first I want to remark that in the zero temperature limit, this is very well understood and related to random matrix theory. So if we define MNT to be this, so we just normalize by beta the logarithm and let beta go to infinity, then this is the maximum over, this maximum here is over all increasing paths from 1, 0 to Tm, right, of the weight of those paths. And this random variable is, although it looks rather complicated, in fact, we understand its distribution very well. So maybe I'll just say, this is just a word about one way. So one way of thinking about this random variable is in terms of reflecting Brownian motion. So you can think of MNT as being the process that you get. If you start with one, just the graph of one one-dimensional Brownian motion, B1, and then you take another Brownian motion and you reflect it on top of the first path, and then you take a third one and you reflect it off what you get after the first stage. Because Brownian motions reflected off each other in a sequential manner. That's what this random variable is. It's a very natural, and in fact you should think that this is really the natural Brownian analog of the totally asymmetric exclusion process. It's asymmetric in the sense that the interaction is always sort of one-sided. Right? And this is just to remark that again there's a Brownian scaling property, and so we note that MNT of root T, the distribution of that is independent of T, right, just from the scaling property of Brownian motion. And so here's a remarkable fact, which is that if we consider MN, this random variable MN at time 1, it has the same distribution as the largest eigenvalue of a n by n standard GUE random matrix. I've just written that there explicitly. in other words, its distribution is given by, this is the joint distribution of the eigenvalues of an n by n GUE random matrix. This H here is the van der Mand function squared times the Gaussian. Cn there is just a normalization constant. And so if you integrate that over the maximum thing at most y, then that's the distribution function of Mn. And so, for example, this can be used to study the asymptotics of this random variable using random matrix theory techniques. So that integral that I just showed you here is in fact a Fredholm determinant. It's a Fredholm determinant of an integral operator the kernel of this integral operator is the so-called Hermite kernel, so it's given in terms of Hermite polynomials, which I haven't written down, and this is restricted to the interval from y to infinity. And so, for example, the asymptotic distribution of Mn, if you subtract twice n, which is the first order behavior, and look at it on a scale of n to the one-third, is given by the so-called Tracy Whittam distribution from random matrix theory. And that's also given by a Fredholm determinant, where the kernel is given in terms of the so-called airy kernel, so it's given in terms of airy functions. And so so really what I'd like to describe in this talk is that, in fact, there is a kind of parallel to this in the finite temperature setting. Okay. So, in order to kind of motivate that a little, I just want to say a little bit more about this zero temperature setting and to understand exactly what is the relationship between these random variables M and T, which are the Brownian motion reflected off of Brownian motion and so on, and something known as Dyson's Brownian motion. So in fact, so I mentioned that Mn 1 at time 1 has the same distribution as the largest eigenvalue of a GUE random matrix. Now there's a processed version of the GUE random matrix ensemble where instead of having Gaussian entries in your matrix, in your Hermitian matrix, you have independent one-dimensional Brownian motion. And Dyson considered this in the 60s and showed that in fact the eigenvalue process associated with that matrix value process is in fact a diffusion, so it's a Markov process. And there are different ways of describing it, but you can think of it as a Brownian motion. So the eigenvalues 1 to n are a Brownian motion conditioned to stay in this set forever. Okay, so it's a dupe transform of independent one-dimensional Brownian motion. And the generator is given in, it's a Langevin diffusion, that's what it's asking, and there's a drift, which actually, when you compute this drift, what it gives you is this, there's a pairwise repulsion between the eigenvalues, which is inversely proportional to their distance. Okay, so in fact, it's not just the case that Mn1 has the same law as the largest eigenvalue of a GUE random matrix, but if you consider it as a process in time, Mn of t, so actually that has the same law as the largest eigenvalue of a matrix value Brownian motion. It's the first coordinate of a n-dimensional diffusion. Okay, so now I'll describe. So there's an analogous result in finite temperature, and to describe that result, we need to introduce an object which will give us the finite temperature analog of Dyson's Brownian motion, and that's constructed using something called the quantum total lattice. So this is the Hamiltonian, it's the Schrödinger operator. So that's the Laplacian on Rn. And the potential is given by the sum of exponentials of the adjacent differences xi minus xi plus 1 minus xi. Okay. And this is a completely integrable system. I very much studied in the literature and solvism. In particular, there's a very nice integral formula for the eigenfunctions, which is due to Gibbon-Self from the 90s. And one of those eigenfunctions is positive and has eigenvalue 0. It says we have a positive harmonic function with respect to H. And this gives us a natural diffusion associated with this Schrodinger operator by the corresponding Dube transform. Oh, sorry. So that's a funny fact. Okay, so, so this is just to give you. So I just said there's a nice integral formula. I didn't say what it looks like. Okay, so this would take a little while to explain, but if this means something to you, then great. If it doesn't, just ignore it, I guess. So this eigenfunction of Psi0x can be interpreted as a kind of volume of the set of Gelfand-Seltmann patterns. So a Gelfand-Seltmann pattern is it's just a pattern. So you consider several copies of the real line, and you put n. You have n points on the first copy. Okay. So this is going to be this whole thing is a pattern,
and then you put two
points on the second line,
and the constraint is that this one should lie between
these two,
and this one should lie between
these two. So in other words, they should be interlaced.
Okay, and then the last one is interlaced with the first two.
That's an example of a Gelfand-Seltmann pattern.
And if you fix these points here,
you consider the set of all such patterns, that's a polytope with a finite volume.
And in fact, in this case, if that's x1, x2, x3, and the corresponding volume is proportional to the van der Man function
evaluated at x1, x2, and x3, that h of x.
And
completely analogously with this leading eigenfunction Psi0
is also a kind of volume, except instead of having indicator functions in the integral to
specify these constraints,
that that's less than equal to that, and that's less than equal to that, and so on,
you replace those by
double exponentials, e to the minus e to the a minus b.
So it's sort of easy to remember in the left side.
It also kind of,
illustrates how very much, so everything that I will describe is really very much in parallel with the zero temperature setting,
except
somehow you have this exponentiation going on in the formula.
Okay, so the theorem is that the, going back to the partition function, so Znt, remember, was our partition function for this model, that the log of Znt as a stochastic process in T has the same distribution as the first coordinate of the diffusion in Rn, which is given by, this is a Dube transform of H. So it has this same form, except, so it looks like Dyson's Brownian motion, except instead of having the van der Man function here, we have this function at Psi0. Okay. And there's just, okay, so there's, obviously you can start this diffusion anywhere. If you think of what's happening with this partition function, remember that Znt was an integral starting from 0 of these exponentials of Brownian motion. So Zn at time 0 is actually 0, right? Zn at time 0 is actually 0. It was an integral, right, of these exponentials. So the logarithm is minus infinity. So actually, log of Znt
takes the value minus infinity at time 0. Right?
So the first coordinate, for this
statement to make sense,
the first coordinate of the diffusion I'm talking about
has to take the value minus infinity, right?
And in fact, the theorem states that there is an entrance law in Rn for this diffusion in Rn so that it starts from something which, okay, so I'm just calling it minus infinity, right? For which this theorem is true. Okay. So it's actually completely analogous to taking your Dyson Brownian motions, which are Brownian motions conditioned never to exit, never to intersect, okay, and starting them all at the same point. Okay, so that's, you know, if you start Brownian motions at the same point, you might think it's quite hard to condition them never to intersect, but you should condition them to never to intersect first, and then you can show that actually letting them all be equal is in fact, you can do that. So there is a unique way of doing it, in fact. So I'll come to that. So really we want to know what this entrance law is, because, you know, this entrance law, if you consider it at time t, you know, the first marginal of that n-dimensional distribution is the distribution of the logarithmic partition function. So we'd like to know what is that entrance law. So before going on to that, I'll just say words. I think at this point it's also natural to ask, well, what about the other coordinates of this diffusion? I mean, can you represent them in the same way, or do they have a meaning? And in fact, the answer is yes. So if we just define the x1t to be the one that we're interested in, okay, then you can define a process, an n-dimensional process, by the following formula. Okay. So I'm defining it so that the sum x1 up to xk is given by the log of each of the sum weight, where this is now over sets of k paths, and those paths should be non-intersecting. So those paths on these sort of upright paths in the lattice should be non-intersecting. And if we do that, and we consider the n-dimensional process that we get, so in fact, really the theorem is that this process that I've constructed, and the first coordinate of this new process is the logarithmic partition function we're interested in. So that n-dimensional process is in fact a diffusion process, and it has this generator L. So it is this geometric analog of Dyson Brownian motion. So that's sort of, the theorem I just stated here is a corollary of that. So really, you know, how this statement is proved is actually by proving this this term. And so if any of you are familiar with the RSK correspondence, or if you've seen things about this was something which was used very much in the study of last passage directed percolation, for example, in the papers by Bike, Daft, and Johansson, and then Johansson on this corner growth model and so on, they all use this RSK correspondence, which is a kind of a combinatorial bijection, which so that there's a kind of a mapping involved, which has very nice properties, which allows them to compute explicitly the distribution of that longest increasing subsequence or last passage percolation variable. And this is completely analogous to that. So this construction that I've described here is a variation of this RSK correspondence. So if you're familiar with the RSK correspondence, then you would actually recognize this as a kind of variation of something which is known as Green's theorem in that combinatorial literature. And I also want to mention that the case when n is equal to 2, so really what gave a strong indication that something like this should be true is that when n is equal to 2, this theorem is in fact due to Matsumoto and Yoi. Which is essentially a statement about one-dimensional Brownian motion in that case. And the Matsumoto and Yoi proved what they describe, they call a geometric analog of Pittman's 2m minus x theorem. Actually, I'm doing pretty well for time. So Maybe I'll just tell you what that is. Okay, so I think that's this is sort of some background from the back, the sort of background, which is behind the tent. In the 70s, Jim Pittman showed that, proved a very nice result about one-dimensional Brownian motion, which is that if we take BT to be just standard one-dimensional Brownian motion, and M of T, let's call it S. Okay.
And you'll know why it's called the 2M minus S.
Yeah. So M of T is the maximum of the S. And the theorem is that the process 2mt minus x, sorry, that should be that.
2mt minus xt is a Markov process in its own filtration, which is smaller than the filtration of x.
It's a non-trivial effect, which is that this is in fact a three-dimensional Bessel process.
So it has the same distribution as the norm of a Brownian motion in R3.
So that's a one-dimensional diffusion process. And somehow the kind of significant content in this statement is just simply the fact that this is a Markov process. So it's not obviously Markov. And then more recently, Matsumoto and Yor in 1999, they showed that if you consider the analog of this functional of Brownian motion for exponential functionals, for geometric Brownian motion, which is if you consider the integral of e to the 2 xs minus f t df from 0 to t. Right. So this is, and we can take a logarithm if you like. F bigger than 0, sorry, t bigger than 0. Okay, now this process is also a diffusion process. And, I'm going to write the generator in a form that sort of resembles, so you can sort of see how this is related to this theorem. The generator, with generator given by half d squared by dx squared plus let's just write log. Should I erase this? If anybody wants to make a note of the path to erase, I should do it there. So where this psi of x is k0 minus x. So k0 is the MacDonald function. This is the Bessel k function with parameter 0. And this psi of x is an eigenfunction of this is a one-dimensional Schrodinger operator with an exponential potential, and that, you know, this is really the one-dimensional or n equals 2 case of the quantum Toda Hamiltonian that I wrote down. So this is this theorem is a multi-dimensional generalization of this theorem of Matsumoto. Okay, so this is just a remark on. So how do you prove? How do you? There are many different ways. I guess I've been working for a number of years now on variations of Pitman's 2n-x theorem. So I think I know about at least six different ways of proving Pitman's 2n-x theorem. There's many different ways of proving it. But there's one approach which is very nicely described in a paper by Rogers and Pitman, which uses the theory of Markov functions. So it uses there's a theorem which says that if you can verify a certain intertwining relationship between semigroups, then you can deduce that a particular function of a Markov process is itself a Markov process. So that's the approach which works well here. And so the first thing is that, you know, if you consider this process that I described, if you consider I described it for a particular value of m, remember these xk's here. Sorry, m. So this was defined for a particular value of m, right? But on the same probability space, you can construct this for any m, right? For n minus 1, n minus 2, and so on. And you get a kind of a tower, x1 up to xn, which lives in r times r2 up to rn. And that's a big, you know, it's a Markov chain and quite a big state space, but its evolution is actually very simple. And you can just write down the SDs that satisfies. And then what we want to show is that xn, just the top layer of this process, is itself a Markov process. So that's a function of a Markov process. And that's how the theory fits in. So the Markov property of xn follows from a certain intertwining relation, which you have to verify. And then, obviously, so we're interested in this entrance law from minus infinity, which takes some extra care. So that's how it's proved. And now to answer Tom's question, sorry for the delay. So this entrance law, mu, so I'm denoting it by mu of t, is given by this formula here. So psi 0 is the positive harmonic function that I described already. These are the other eigenfunctions. And there's a kind of a spectral decomposition theorem for the quantum total lattice, which we're using here, in fact, so which is due to Semenov, Tian, Shamsky from the 80s. And it involves this measure, okay, so the measure in the dual, in the spectral variable, is given by this product of inverse gamma functions. Okay, so that's the formula. And actually, we can work with this formula. So this is actually, these eigenfunctions have very nice properties. And so in particular, there's an amazing sort of analog of the integrating out lemma which is used for determinantal point processes in this setting as well, which was it's conjectured by Bumpf in the 80s. So these functions, by the way, they're also known as Whitaker functions. And Dan Bumpf wrote a book about them. So in particular, he made a conjecture which has to do with here we're taking a product of, so there's a product of two of these eigenfunctions. And we'd like to, so this measure is on r to the n. And we'd like to integrate out x2 up to xn. Right? And in fact, remarkably, when you do that, you take a product of two of these eigenfunctions, you can really integrate out all the variables up to n, two to n, and get a very simple formula. So there's a. So in fact, this is what comes out. And so the nice formula that you get is for the Laplace transform. The Laplace transform ZMT is given by this integral. So you just get an exponential bit, product of gamma functions, and then here you have this Gaussian times this Sn, which is this so-called Sclayanin measure system, is the measure which appears in the spectral decomposition term. And in fact, well, so it's not obvious immediately from this formula, but this is actually a Frederick determinant. So this is a kind of the starting point for doing some kind of asymptotic analysis now, which we're looking at now. So this is what this measure. So remember, Sn was this was a product of reciprocal gamma functions of the differences, and just using the functional identity for the gamma function, you can write this in this way, which some of you might recognize as, so this measure here is actually a familiar measure in random matrix theory. It's the, there's different ways of thinking about it, but so for example, this is what you get if you take a GUE random matrix and you add to it a diagonal matrix which has the entries n minus 1, n minus 3, down to 1 minus n, right? And you consider that the law of the eigenvalues of that so-called perturbed GUE random matrix, then you get exactly this measure. So this is well studied. And in particular, it's a determinantal point process, and the kernel is known explicitly. For example, Johansson has studied this kernel in some detail. So that's really this is just to mention how this sort of fits in with some recent remarkable developments in the context of the KPZ equation. This logarithmic partition function should converge, but does converge in an appropriate scaling to sort of the partition function which gives you the so-called Kohl-Hopf solution for the KPZ equation. And this was recently solved, using an approximation of the KPZ equation by the weakly asymmetric exclusion process by Amir, Corwin, and Postel, and Sasamoto and Stone, where they showed that in fact you could write down the distribution of the solution at a given point in time and space explicitly. And so what we'd like to do now is to sort of use this model to as an alternative approximation and consider the scaling limits of these formulas like this, for example. Right. So I think I'll have I gone very fast? I guess I have. So this is an hour long talk. Well, there's plenty of time for questions. This is as far as I've time to go. Yeah.
We started 5 minutes early.
Good point. Yeah. In this model, you mean? Yeah. Yes. So for example, if we consider Zn n, so in the box beside n, then to get into the crossover regime, it's known actually from I think the work of people in this room. So you're asking the wrong person anyway. That you should take beta to be n to the minus a quarter. So beta should be going to zero in that. To recover that sort of crossover scaling regime, if you keep beta fixed, then we expect the asymptotic distribution of log of Zn over n to go to the Drake-Zabudin distribution, which is sort of the long-time behavior of the KPC equation. Oh. Can somebody rescue me, please? Actually, so I know very little about quantum integrable systems, except that you start with a classical integrable system, and you replace the momentum operators by derivatives, right? So the classical total lattice has the sum of that seems to be the case, although I don't know if there's any, I'm sure there's other people who can answer this better than me. The definition of complete integrability, actually I couldn't even reproduce it. It has to do with, so maybe somebody else can answer this, yeah. It is completely, Constant proved that in the 80s, yeah. Yeah. In a way, it's more analogous to starting with Dirichlet notation and making a transform of that. And the Weyl chamber, yeah. Because Dyson's Baryonic motion is a dupe transform of the Dirichlet notation using the harmonic function, which is the van der Waal function, yeah. And actually, you can sort of see that in maybe even in this one-dimensional setting, it's kind of a nice example to think about. So if you have, if you take this Schrodinger operator here, and you rescale it, you put in some parameter here, so that instead of, you can think of it probabilistically, this operator is the generator of a Brownian motion, which is killed by Feynman-Katz, which is killed according to this potential. So when it's in position X, it's sort of killed with probability e to the minus X dt. Right? So and then what we're doing by making this dupe transform, intuitively what we're doing is we're conditioning that Brownian motion to survive in that thing forever in that killing potential. Right. So if we put in a parameter here, then we can sort of make this exponential potential become very steep, right? So that it's effectively becoming a potential which just simply kills the Brownian motion as soon as it hits zero. And that's the Dirichlet of that thing. So that's for finite beta, it should go to this for fixed beta, you mean? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. So, good question. So somehow it seems that what's easy to compute for this model, because you have this Markovian structure in time, we can compute straight out of this the joint law of Zn at different times, but you get similar expressions. And but the scaling limit of this is somehow going to be, yeah, we'll go to two times for the Airy process, but they sort of have a space interpretation, I think. I'm not sure. I get confused in this sort of time and space. In the context of KPZ, there's some rotations involved, and yeah. So I think, yeah.
Other questions? No? Okay. Well, thanks.